Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up with the alarm on my phone. Phone died in the middle of the night. I wake up like an hour and a half after the time I usually wake up. So I'm in a fucking panic all day trying to go as fast as I can to get the show ready. I fucking did it. I don't know how I did it, but I did it. So do have a full jam-packed show for you today. I was going at light speed. I'll give you a quick little rundown here, what you have to look forward to. Also, just real quick, there's something that pops up on Blog Talk Radio on the host end talking about some technical issues. So if things are fucked up for whatever reason, get mad at them, don't get mad at me. Okay, sorry. Hillary Clinton went after Chris Christie, so Chris Christie went back at her. We're going to kick it off with that in just a second. We're already starting to see the 2016 debate happened right in front of our eyes here. We got Marco Rubio made an ass of himself yet again, this time on Fox News. We will mock him pretty harshly. Donald Trump, I'm probably going to mock Donald Trump twice as hard as I'm going to mock Marco Rubio, because Trump, God, I might have to come to a conclusion today on air, a conclusion that will no doubt make me look like an asshole, but I feel like I have to do it because there's just too much evidence at this point. But I'll bite my tongue right now. Then we have Boko Haram, a heartbreaking story about terrorist attacks they're doing. Rush Limbaugh is on the way out, got the evidence of that. And later on in the show, Ann Coulter and what she thinks of immigrants, I think you already know. Louie Gohmert, America's dumbest congressman, weighs in on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and he's just as stupid as you thought he was. And Deepak Chopra versus Richard Dawkins. So fun, man. It's going to be a fun Friday show. Let's go ahead and get started here, and we'll kick it off with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton made a statement on Thursday basically accusing Chris Christie and other Republicans of being on a, quote, crusade against voting rights by not allowing same-day voter registration. Well, apparently this got under Chris Christie's skin. So on Friday, he responded, and he responded harshly. He said, quote, Secretary Clinton doesn't know the first thing about voting rights in New Jersey or in the other states that she attacked. My sense is that she just wants an opportunity to commit greater acts of voter fraud around the country. So Chris Christie is accusing Hillary Clinton of trying to do voter fraud. What the fuck are you talking about? What does that even mean? Look, the first thing that popped in my mind as I heard this was all like the Acorn conspiracies. You remember that? When Acorn no longer existed in the 2012 elections, I think it was like 51% of the Republican Party thought that Acorn stole the election for Obama. Is this what he's hinting at here? Is he hinting at this, that Hillary Clinton's, you know, riding some sort of a cheese bus with a whole bunch of people, and she's whispering to them going, all right, well, you go in there, you vote once under the name Marcus, and then you come back out, I'll give you the card that says that you're John, and you go back in there. Chris, what the fuck are you talking about? Hillary Clinton is trying to, quote, commit greater acts of voter fraud around the country. What does that mean, that she committed great acts before and she's just trying to commit greater acts now? What voter fraud are you referring to? Okay, we've covered studies on voter fraud on the show. It's virtually non-existent. There was one hilarious story of a Republican who was so outraged by voter fraud that he committed it to make a point to try to say, aha, see, we've made it easy to do voter fraud. He got caught immediately. So this idea of, like, rampant voter fraud around the country in order to make the Democrats win, like, oh, there's foul play going on the Democratic side. Nonsense. You know where the foul play is? On your side, Chris. Hillary Clinton, I don't agree with her on a lot, but she's 100% right when she says that conservatives and Republicans are on a crusade against voting rights. And the reason for it is very simple. It's because they know that the more people vote in an election, the more likely it is to go Democratic. That's fully understood, and that's why Republicans have, for many elections now, they've tried to suppress voter turnout, because they know that, you know, the people who, if you have a smaller number of people voting, who's it going to be? Old white people, by and large. It's going to be mostly old white people. The more people that vote, well, then you start to get more women vote, more minorities vote, younger people vote. And then when those groups turn out, they're overwhelmingly Democratic. And by the way, this is why, you know, the voter ID laws specifically targeted poor areas and specifically targeted minority areas, because they know that these are people who would vote Democratic, and they're trying to discourage them from showing up to the polls. And you don't even need to take my word for it, man. I mean, we've covered videos on the show before of state politicians admitting when they didn't realize that there was a camera on, like, yeah, no, with this new voter ID law passed, we'll have a better chance at winning the next election. That's them admitting, yes, this is us trying to suppress the vote, and if we suppress the vote, we have a better chance of winning. This is why so many Republican states and so many Republican governors decided, I'm going to not do early voting, or I'm going to cut off a few days from early voting because I say so, and then they make up some bullshit reason. When the reality is, we all know that who's more likely to miss voting if you do that? Well, the people who are voting early are usually voting early for work reasons. They're trying to take some specific time off so that they can go vote. And when you take away that day, well, then they're Foxville. Then they got to go to work for the actual election day. I mean, it's amazing the ways in which, you know, we suppress democracy in America. Not saying the American people are, by and large, really politically astute. They're not. But make no mistake about it. The Republicans are trying to limit the number of people that vote. So, I mean, I love this. It's the classic Republican trick, how they try to flip it, right? Not only – it's not like – Chris Christie heard this critique and he played defense. No, he didn't. He immediately went on the offense. Like, us fucking with elections? No, you're fucking with elections. My ass cheeks, Chris. Of course they're not. Of course the Democrats are not. And by the way, this is one of the main reasons why Democrats really actually care more about democracy in America. Is I don't think it's just because they're principled. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they know the more people vote, the more likely the election is to go for them. So, you know, what else is there to say about a ridiculous human being like Chris Christie? I don't want to get into this, and I had a video up, but I'm not going to play it because it's not worth anything here. But Chris Christie was at a celebrity baseball game, and he was wearing, like, the classic baseball outfit. Oh, Chris, why'd you do it? Look, man, I don't make nearly, you know, Jimmy Dore is the king of the Chris Christie fat jokes. I make them every now and then. I don't go overboard with it or anything, but he looked like fucking Humpty Dumpty. He looked like he was pregnant. Don't take my word for it. As I'm talking to you right now, you pull it up, man. It was at Yankee Stadium. It was Chris Christie. He was playing in this NYPD celebrity game for the – and by the way, there's nothing wrong with it. He was playing because of the officers who got murdered. I have no problem with him playing in it, but God, he looks so silly. Oh, he looks so silly. The thing about Chris Christie, though, is as silly as he looks, he sounds dumber. I told you guys, we spoke about this at the TYT event I was at in YouTube Space New York. I'm surprised by how stupid Chris Christie really is. Because, you know, I thought he was clever enough politically to get ahead. He's got that fake tell-it-like-it-is thing going on, the tough guy New Jersey thing going on. Republicans will like that authoritarian attitude. But it turns out that, you know, on policy issues, like, he's totally for the NSA taking away all of your civil liberties. Fun. Like, on all the policy issues where he should take more of a Rand Paul line and, you know, find a way to be more moderate and appeal to everybody. He's not. He's fallen right into the old trap of, let me be a super right-wing douchebag. All right, asshole, you see what happened to Rick Santorum in the last election. You see what happened to Mike Huckabee in the two elections ago. Take that far-right line. See how far it gets you. You remember a guy named Tom Tancredo? Exactly, you don't. Why? Because he ran uber far-right, and he didn't fucking make it, man. He didn't make it. Yes, the venomous base likes that far-right-wing garbage. But the thing is, if you look at the last two races, who got through on the Republican side? John McCain, who was the most moderate of everybody in the debates in 2008, and Mitt Romney, who was also the most moderate. Now, understand, those guys were still super far right. They said a lot of stupid shit during the primary season, but they were certainly, you know, more moderate than Duncan Hunter and people like that. So, Chris, you're going in the wrong direction here, buddy, but I don't know why I'm giving him any advice at all. I shouldn't do that. Continue to shoot yourself in the foot. In the large foot. Okay, I had to do it. I had to say it. I'm sorry. All right, let's go to Marco Rubio here. This one is foreign policy, bitch. What did I say yesterday? I was tweeting about it last night. I think it was Bladow, bitch. And I don't know what the context was. I just said it at a random time. Was it Fladow or Bladow? Whatever. I don't remember. It's whatever I say it is. How about that? All right, Marco Rubio, let's do it. Marco Rubio went on the Fox News show Outnumbered, and he laid out his foreign policy, and he did it with an awesomely dumb contradiction.
I think we have a responsibility to support democracy, and if a nation expresses a desire to become a democratic nation, particularly one that we invaded, I do believe we have a responsibility to help them move in that direction. But the most immediate responsibility we have is to help them build a functional government that can actually meet the needs of the people in the short and long term, and then ultimately from that we would hope it would spring...
That sounds like nation building.
Well,
I mean,
it's not nation building. We are assisting them in building their nation.
No, I don't want a nation build. I want to build nations. There's a difference. Get with it. I love it when politicians say dumb shit, and then they look at you like, you're the stupid one. They look at you in a condescending way like, oh, you just don't understand the nuance of what I'm saying. No, there is no nuance. You're making an ass of yourself. No, I don't want a nation build. I want to assist in building the nation. Hello? Think about how unpopular that is. And look, let's be clear. I mean, I don't know what kind of distinction he's trying to draw here. Nation building is... The idea was never, okay, you just move everybody out of the way who's in the country and you just take over and build everything yourself. No, nation building is exactly what he thought his distinction was. It's U.S. contractors and U.S. tax dollars and our government going in there and building alongside of people in the country. So there's no difference, really, between the two things. So I don't know exactly what the fuck he's getting at. But think about how unpopular that is. I find it stunning. I shouldn't, because I follow politics closely and I've been doing it for years. But I'm always amazed at, you know, people like Lindsey Graham, people like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush. They advocate for things that are absolutely, positively, tremendously unpopular in the polls, and they do it as if they're nailing it and as if they're speaking for some sort of silent majority in America that agrees with them. Nobody agrees with you, man. Nobody agrees with you. Look, I'll go further than most would. I'd even venture to say that most conservatives don't even agree with that. You know, it's a different thing if you frame it as like, yeah, let's go get the bad guys. Ah, Saddam was bad. Ah, fuck Al-Qaeda. Then they're like, okay, yeah, let's go kill those people. But even they start to go, whoa, pump your brakes when they hear the idea of, well, after we kill them, we should, like, stay there and spend more of our money to build shit there. Then they're like, I was with y'all on the killing and shit, but I ain't with y'all on the building shit up now. Come on. So you got conservatives, certainly libertarians, and progressives are all like, no, 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 stop. So So who's Marco Rubio representing? I'll tell you who he's representing. The billionaires, the corporations, and the military-industrial complex. These are people who give him money, so he's representing them. But the thing about a guy like Marco Rubio is he's not smart enough to realize there are different audiences that he has to try to appeal to. So all he's doing is, like, looking at the billionaires and the military-industrial complex. He's like, can I blow you now? Please, I want to give you a sloppy, wet blowjob. And he forgets that, like, dude, you got to get John in Arkansas to go out to the polls to vote for you. What the fuck are you doing? Even Fox hosts. Even when Fox hosts are like, that sounds like nation building, and I'm not sure that's a good idea. Oh, my God, you've gone so far off the rails. And I don't know if you caught it at the beginning there, but he was like, you know, we should support democracy around the world. Okay. Calm down, human Ken doll. So you want to support democracy? Wonderful. How about we start with Saudi Arabia? No, see, this is the thing that's so frustrating about these right-wingers, is that there's no consistency. Hypocrisy is built into their ideology. Because they talk about democracy and freedom, and they use all these flowery words and rhetoric. But then when you say to them, okay, well, we're best friends with Saudi Arabia, and they're an authoritarian regime and a theocracy, and they've implemented Sharia, why aren't we changing that? They go, oh, no, they get a pass. They get to have the worst kind of fascism imaginable, and it's okay because they're our buddy and they do business with us. They're our oil sugar daddy, so it's cool. They can do whatever they want. And you say, okay, well, you still say you believe in democracy and freedom. How about, I don't know, Brunei, who just implemented Sharia law? Well, no, they're allowed to have Sharia because we just let them into the TPP, the new so-called free trade deal, and they're going to give us cheap labor so they can be as authoritarian as they want, rock and roll. So, okay, but then how can you say you support democracy? Malaysia is another perfect example. We support democracy around the world, which is why we just let into our trade deal Malaysia, who tolerates slave labor. Again, so we can get cheap labor for our corporations. Don't give me this horse shit that you support democracy. You don't. You know what you are? You're a classic imperialist. You believe American power is just and right by definition. Anything we do is right by definition. So you can talk about democracy all you want, but then if you support Sharia over here and a slave system over there and repression over there, well, it's okay because we're the good guys. We think we mean well, therefore forget all the hypocrisies that are built into the system, accept it and shut the fuck up. Well, we're not going to shut the fuck up because we don't trust you and we don't like you and we see through your bullshit and we know you're just not that smart because you say shit like, I don't want to do nation building. I just want to build nations. Okay. That was fun. God, I hate Marco Rubio. God, I hate him. He's such an empty suit. He's such an empty suit. I can't take it. I can't take it. He's the fucking walking embodiment of an empty suit. Like, they make him look like, oh, he's a good-looking guy. He's got the old-school 1950s hair parted on the side, haircut. He's always in a nice tailored suit, and he puts on the fake politician rhythm and cadence in his voice. But every single thing he says is dumb. You know why I hate him? Because he's so the antithesis of everything we try to stand for on this show. You know, I mean, sometimes I don't fucking shave my face for a week and you can see. I got gross fucking weird facial hair. Sometimes I can't. I don't gel my hair. I got the fucking white boy afro going on air. Because it's not about that. It's not about how I look. It's about the shit I'm saying. I've gotten so many criticisms on just the way I dress. That's okay, because we try to care about the ideas over everything else. Marco Rubio is the polar opposite. He doesn't give a fuck about the substance. It's all, how do I look? How do I sound? Am I doing the politician's cadence right? Am I appeasing everybody? No, Marco, you're not. He's the kind of guy, it looks like he wants power for the sake of having power, and that's what gets under my skin. A real leader is a leader who's reluctant to even take the power. Look at what George Washington did. George Washington was offered, hey, man, you want to be the king of the United States of America? He's like, no, I'm good. How about we don't have kings? How about that radical idea? I'm not better than you. What are you talking? This is crazy. A real leader is reluctant to lead because they don't want to have all that responsibility. They don't want to feel like the world is on their shoulders. But the thing is, a real leader has good ideas. And Marco Rubio is the opposite. No ideas, but he wants to lead. Give me the glory because I'm a narcissistic asshole, but I don't want to work for your respect, and I don't want to work for that glory. fuck. Can't tell. I really dislike Marco Rubio. Somebody send this to him and tell him he's a punk bitch. All right, let's go to Donald Trump, a bigger punk bitch, before we take our first break here. Donald Trump went on a radio show to discuss politics and to tease another non-run in 2016. Somehow, the media always, in one way or another, falls for it. Less outlets are falling for it this time around because it's his 37th time doing this. But there are still some that are like, ooh, let's entertain the idea that this fucking buffoon with an orangutan head is going to run. So here's what he's going to share with us. He figured out how to defeat ISIS. He knows exactly how to do it. But he won't tell us because we haven't asked him nicely enough. When we come back from listening to the clip here, I'm going to be an asshole, but I think it's totally merited. Let's watch.
I know a way that would absolutely give us guaranteed victory. I'm going to say it. I guess I'll be forced to say it at some time, but I hate to say it because as soon as you say it, they're going to be just, you know, it's an idea that, in my opinion, is foolproof. And I'm not talking about dropping bombs.
No.
I'm not talking about dropping the big nuke. I'm talking about something that would be unbelievable as an idea. Problem is, then everybody's going to take the idea, run with it, and number one, people forget where it came from, and that's less important. And number two, it gives the enemy, they'll be able to protect against it.
Well, I understand
that. I'm going to hold that off, Simon, but at some point I'll be forced to say.
I understand that, but let me ask you one question before I let you go. Have you run that idea past any generals, any SEALs, anybody with military experience?
Yes, I ran it past two or three people.
Okay. And
simple. It's like the paperclip. You know, somebody came up with the idea of the paperclip and made a lot of money.
Sure,
everybody's saying, boy, why didn't I think of that? That was so simple. This is so simple, so surgical, it would be an unbelievable thing. Now, you know, I've been around saying this. You would think somebody from the administration at least would call me and say, hey, could you tell us what it is? It happens to be a great idea. But at the right time, I guess I'll give it.
Right.
I hate to give it in one way because, you know, if I ran and won, I'd hate like hell to have this idea. Because once you give it, it really ceases to be.
No,
you lose the surprise.
I get that completely.
I keep thinking of General Patton and General MacArthur. They spin in their grave when they watch these people that just don't know what they're doing. We have leadership, and they're all a bunch of clowns.
Yeah. Yeah. They are a bunch of clowns. They are a bunch of clowns. Okay, I'm just going to say it. I think he's special needs. I do. I don't know exactly what it is, but he's special needs of some sort. Dude, a normal person doesn't say... Even people who I hate with a burning passion and I disagree with completely, like Marco Rubio in the segment we just did, even he would not and could not give an incoherent, babbling response on the issue of ISIS, where it's almost like he's legitimately acting like a child. Like, you know, I know how to beat them. I figured it out, and it's my idea, but I don't know if I want to share it, because once I share it, then everybody else is going to take it and they're going to run with it, and people are going to forget where the idea comes from. So he's taking the ISIS situation, he's making it about him. He doesn't give a fuck about what's actually going on. He's trying to use it for his own glory. Like, I'm the genius who came up with this, and I want everybody to remember it, which is why I'm not going to share it right now, so ISIS can continue marauding, and I'll just keep this to myself, because I have the super secret, awesome response here on how to fix it. Defeating ISIS is kind of like inventing the paperclip. This guy, man, I'm sorry, but his mind doesn't function like yours and mine does. Once you give away the secret to beating ISIS, it loses its surprise. Now, obviously, he doesn't have any answers because he's a buffoon. But just play along with his stupidity for a second. Imagine he did. If I knew, actually knew 100% I know how to defeat ISIS, I would try, by any means necessary, I would try. I have ideas that I think would be better, right? But I would try everything in my power to say, this. He's like, I have the answer. I'm not telling, though. I'm not telling because I want to have the glory, and I'm so... Imagine I run and win, and then somebody already used my idea. I would be so mad if they used it before me, because then I can't get the glory. Again, we just spoke about this, man. This is not how a leader thinks. This is not how an intelligent person thinks. This is not how any normal human being thinks. I'm sorry, but I am going to be the asshole and declare now. I think Donald Trump is special needs. Nobody does that. Nobody says that. Nobody has... I mean, Republicans, by and large, do have, like, a lack of an ability to look inwards and criticize themselves by the same standards that they criticize other people. But with Donald Trump, it's like, it's that in hyperdrive, you know? It's that plus eight levels where just no ability to turn criticism inward and to look at himself in a way where he's judging himself. Dude, you're Donald Trump, and you just said somebody else is a clown. Stop the embarrassment, Don, for your own good. Okay. I'm not, for the record here, I'm not kidding. I think if you listen to that clip again, it'll be up on YouTube, you know, later tomorrow. Go back, listen to it again. Listen to it a few times, okay? I had to listen while I was chopping it earlier when I was cutting off the loose ends and stuff. I had to listen to it a few times when it was rendering in the video editing software. I had to listen to it over and over. And by like the second or third time, I was like, no, that's it. That's it. This guy, he's got screws missing. I'm not just saying that like, you know, like I normally say about Republicans, oh, this guy's dumb, I don't like this guy. No, he's got some sort of issue. He's special needs in some kind of way, I don't know what kind of way. He may even be diagnosed, but maybe just undiagnosed and wandering around like a crazy person like he's been for decades. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a heartbreaking story coming out of Nigeria, and Rush Limbaugh's ratings disaster continues.
Thank you.
All right. Can I tell you guys how beaten down I am then? So I have that, everybody thinks that, like, when I'm missing shows that I'm just a lazy fuckhead. I'm not, I assure you. When was the last time I actually took a vacation? I definitely haven't taken, like, a full week off in 3 years. If I ever missed a show, you guys would know because you listen live, so you know this, but all, like, the YouTube viewers and stuff don't know this. If I ever miss a show, it's because I've been to a wedding or a bachelor party. The last two times I missed, one was a bachelor party, one was a wedding. And even then, I'm, like, squeezing in half a week here and there, trying to get as much out there as I can while I'm gone. So I'm fucking beaten down from this last wedding because I went – so I had to drive to Maryland, which is about 2 to 3 hours away from where I am, and then stayed in a hotel and had to change hotel rooms, had to go to a wedding, had to give a best man speech, had to fucking do this, had to do that. And then, you know, I come back. I came back on Sunday, this past Sunday. Got back, like, middle of the day. I fucking napped the rest of the day, went to sleep, woke up, immediately back at work. So, believe me, there was no day where I'm, like, I was actually off. So it almost feels like a continuous, like, 3 weeks for the past 2 or 3 weeks for me. So I'm beaten down, son. But hopefully I'll get to catch up on some rest this weekend. Although I think Kylan Coren is back again on Sunday, so we'll see. We'll see. All right, let's continue here, and I want to jump ahead to really, really sad story. Okay. We have a heartbreaking story coming out of Nigeria to report on today. The AP says that Boko Haram suicide bombers blew themselves up in the main market in Nigeria's northeastern city of Yola, killing 29 people. And themselves. So that's a huge number, man. Another 38 victims, some with serious injuries, are being treated in the local hospitals there. Now, the story gets even more insane because listen to this. Quote, 2 hours earlier, 8 soldiers were killed by a suicide car bomb at a checkpoint outside a military barracks in Maiduguri, the biggest city in the northeast. So that's 2 terror attacks within 2 hours. The AP says, quote, daily attacks started after the new president, Muhammadu Buhari, declared at his inauguration on May 29th that he is moving the command center for the war from Abuja, the capital of central Nigeria, to Maiduguri. Buhari was in neighboring Chad on Thursday, urging more support for the multinational force in which battle-hardened Chadian troops have played a leading role. So between Nigeria's command center moving to the heart of Boko Haram territory and the Chadian troops helping to weaken Boko Haram along with the Nigerian troops, now in response to that, they're saying, fuck this, balls to the wall, they're waging an all-out offensive, and of course they're killing civilians. Now for those of you who don't know, let me give you some more background information on Boko Haram. They're a Sunni Islamic fundamentalist terror group, or a Wahhabi jihadist group, and their name stands for Western Education is Sin. It's amazing when people, like, parade their ignorance. They're like, we don't like education, fuck that, we don't want to learn, expand our horizons. So basically, these guys are religious dingbats, and they also hail from northern Nigeria, which is the incredibly poor half of Nigeria, where 60% of the population lives on less than $1 a day. So think about it, man. You have a really, really impoverished people plus holy books. Doesn't go well. That's not a nice mix. Now, people, of course, are going to argue till the end of time which one of those things contributes more to the extremism. Is it the poverty or is it the religion? Which one comes first? Is it chicken or the egg? Are they both equal influences? Is it like a 70%, 30% thing? I'll leave that up to you guys. I think I've weighed in enough on that overall. It's fucking half the time I feel like on Secular Talk we weigh in on just that issue. So we have some more information here. They say, quote, Boko Haram killed more than 13,000 civilians between 2009 and 2015, including around 10,000 in 2014 alone, in attacks occurring mainly in northeast Nigeria. 1.5 million people have been forced to leave their homes as a result of Boko Haram violence. Now think about this for a second. These guys are so thoroughly brainwashed that many of them killed their parents. We covered the Vice story recently. It was in a Vice documentary where they were, you know, looking for where they were in Nigeria and they were documenting the back and forth and the war that's going on there. And people were telling stories about how, yeah, these guys butchered their parents. You know, when I read something like that, man, my takeaway is, for that specific atrocity, only religion can convince somebody that that's the moral thing to do. Because think about how warped that is and how far away from what feels natural that is. The idea that, the people who essentially gave you life, even if, let's say, you don't get along with them, or they're bad people, the idea that, like, you're going to kill them, you're going to kill your parents, only dogmatic, hardline religious thinking can convince somebody that, no, it is in fact the moral thing to do that. It's really scary. And I want to give you some more here in terms of what I think is the best way to address this issue. So in my opinion, I think the solution is that the UN should basically give help and give aid to the Nigerian government, for example, who have been fighting Boko Haram, and, you know, just give them the ability, the means to protect themselves. And also an international coalition should step up and defeat these guys. Very similar to what, you know, there's an international coalition now going after ISIS, and I think that makes perfect sense. And here's the thing, man. People wrongly think that if they listen to the show, a lot of people get the misperception that I'm some sort of isolationist. I'm not an isolationist. I'm a non-interventionist, and there is a difference. So what that means is I'm of the belief that the United States should only use military force to defend our own country. And I think that's a standard that most countries should abide by. But that doesn't mean that I don't think somebody should step up in the region in Nigeria and fight Boko Haram and attempt to defeat them. That doesn't mean I don't think that they shouldn't fight al-Shabaab and try to defeat them in Somalia. That doesn't mean that I don't think people should step up and fight ISIS. In fact, I'm totally on board with defeating these people militarily, but I think we've had our run. You know, we've been involved in it for well over a decade, and empirically, we've only made the problem worse, and we haven't been very targeted in our killings, and we've added, unfortunately, we've increased the popularity of the arguments the jihadists make because we've killed so many aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, you name it. So it's not that I don't want anybody to fight these people. I do want people to fight them. I just don't want to lead the fight, and I want other people to do it because, let's face it, Boko Haram is not in Idaho, okay? They're not about to, you know, attack Cleveland. They're not about to attack Wyoming. So with that being the case, yes, I do think it's incumbent upon the governments in the region, the people in the region, to step up and fight those battles on their own. Like I said, no problem with the UN stepping in, no problem with an international coalition stepping in, no problem with all them working together, even no problem if we have to give them a bunch of aid. Okay, no problem. Go to the people you know you can trust, give them aid. But I just don't think, as everybody knows, that that our role should be the main role because we've fucked up virtually everything where we've led the way militarily. But either way, look, the main takeaway, let's not forget the bigger picture here and the main takeaway here, which is that Boko Haram, you know, al-Shabaab also you could say, al-Nusra, ISIS, these are all groups that are the epitome of evil and backwards Islamic ideology and fundamentalism, and they need to be defeated, and it's just a matter of how you do that is where the disagreement comes in. Okay. Now, let's go to Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh's troubles continue. His ratings are an absolute disaster. So I'm going to give you some specifics on that here. This is from Media Matters. They say, quote, "The bad news just keeps coming for conservative talker Rush Limbaugh. Which bulletin was worse, though? The news in April that he was being dropped by WIBC in Indianapolis, a booming talk powerhouse that played home to Limbaugh's radio show for more than two decades? Or the news this week that the talker's new address on the Indianapolis dial is going to be WNDE, a ratings doormat AM sports station that has so few listeners, it trails the commercial-free classical music outlet in town?" So they go on to explain that in New York, Los Angeles, and Boston, which are very important radio markets, he's now, you know, off his flagship station in New York, but even in the other places, he's off the first-tier stations, and he's now on second-tier stations, and even in some cases, third-tier stations. So in the biggest markets, Rush Limbaugh is now on second-tier and third-tier stations. Now, remember, we also covered last year, this didn't get much coverage, it should have, that Limbaugh, in certain markets, he's now beaten by college radio stations. For those of you who know anything about radio, you know how disastrous that is, because college signals suck. They don't go out very far. But more people were listening to college radio than listening to Rush Limbaugh, who's been bragging about the powerhouse that he is for decades. Now, I want to give you some more specifics here. These are some numbers from last year. We've gone over them before, but if anything, these numbers are getting worse. So, for example, in New York, what's he ranked? Remember, this is the guy who's number one in conservative talk, and he boasts, "I get like 20 million listeners every 33 seconds. Okay, so in New York, again, that's where his flagship station was. He was kicked off his flagship station. He's on WOR-AM. He's ranked 21st. What happened? I thought you were number one. Los Angeles, 37th. I didn't even know there were 37 stations that came in with a clear signal. 37th. Now, you might say, well, come on, Kyle, those are, mostly liberal areas. And that's a fair point, except back in Limbaugh's heyday in the 90s, in these markets, his ratings were tremendous. So if you're comparing apples to apples, his prime versus now, him versus him, it's still a disaster, even though you say they're liberal cities. And by the way, there are plenty of conservatives packed in these gigantic cities where there are mostly liberal people. Okay, how about Chicago? 23rd. San Francisco, 29th. How about Dallas and the Fort Worth, Texas area? 18th. How about Philadelphia? 18th. How about Miami, Florida? 24th. How about Seattle? 22nd. Now, there's a lot more numbers here. I only printed out some of them. But if you go through it, I don't think he's number one in any market anymore. This is the guy who markets himself as the number one guy, the biggest conservative talker, millions of listeners, this and that. Dude, it's all a house of cards. Now, his contract, his syndication contract is up next year. Oh, wait and see what happens when it's up. Oh, it's going to be adorable. It's going to be hilarious. Because understand, for a while now, he's basically been coasting off of welfare checks from right-wing think tanks. A lot of people don't know this. The right-wing media machine is basically a giant facade because you have groups like Americans for Prosperity and not Cato, but some of the other more Tea Party-leaning ones. They, Heritage Foundation, for example, they give money to Glenn Beck and the Blaze Network. They give money to Sean Hannity. They give money to Rush Limbaugh. They give money to Mark Levin. And remember, Limbaugh's advertisers have been running for the hills all the way back, going all the way back to the Sandra Fluke incident. When he was, going, "Oh, this woman's a whore because she takes birth control. Listen to my argument from 1952. And a lot of advertisers were like, "Dude, you've gone too far. You've gone too far. You're a bigger liability now. You're not helping us anymore." So a lot of advertisers pulled their ads. Did you know? So I used to listen to some of his show to get some material for my show. you know, going back 2-3 years or so, back when he was still on his flagship station here in New York, they literally played dead air during the break sometimes. And sometimes they played public service announcements. Oh, my God. When you're down to public service announcements and dead air, you basically have no advertisers left. Nobody wants to pay you to be on air. And anybody who knows anything about radio or TV or any of that stuff knows you need advertisers to stay on the air. And again, that brings me back to my sugar daddy point, how he's getting his welfare checks from the right-wing think tanks. The second they realize that this guy's not making them any money and they're just blowing money on him, millions of dollars on him, they're going to go, why would we keep funding him? He's not helping us. He's not getting – the idea is, you know, they pay these guys and these guys – you know, basically push for their listeners to join up with these right-wing think tanks and get their newsletters and all that garbage. Well, they're not. There's no return on investment. There was a good article in Politico recently which highlighted that. They explained how they spent X amount of money on Beck and Limbaugh, and they got X amount of money in return. They're running millions of dollars in the red. So it's a lost investment. It's going to implode soon. The fucking house of cards is going to implode, and guess who's going to be there to take the place in political talk? There was this fucking monster that was coming up behind them at 100 miles an hour, the internet. And they laughed and they poo-pooed it and they ignored it and they acted like, these newfangled machines, nobody can understand them anyway. Let's say AM radio is where people want to go. Reminds me probably back in the day. Morse code is never going to go out of style. This crazy contraption where you're talking to one end and somebody's listening on the other end, that's too difficult to use. They'll like the Morse code. You just press the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Our industry will never go away. The horse and buggy people when the first cars came along. I don't know what they're. We got a horse and a buggy. It works. Good old-fashioned horses. Who would want a car? It's too difficult to work. What happens when it breaks? Stick with the horse and buggy. How'd it work out for all those people? It didn't work out for them. They're gone. How are the floppy disk people feeling today? What's this CD-ROM nonsense that came about? Oh, floppy disks will never go away. Or even the CD people, how do they feel with the internet coming along also? Dude, it's over. You're done. You're done. Step aside, son. It's over. Now understand, Fox News is still a powerhouse on TV, but most of their listeners are 3 trillion years old anyway. So they're also dying out. And Limbaugh's audience is dying out, and AM radio is basically becoming fucking extinct. Your time is up. You had a good run, and you affected the political beliefs of Americans in a very negative way. So now it's time for us internet people to step up and correct all of that shit. We got a lot of work to do. All right, now. We go to Crooks and Liars, and crazy story coming out of Nebraska. Jesus, how am I doing on time here? I always fucking lose track. I'm 86 stories behind. I always bust my ass, over prepare till the last second, and then I get on air and never finish my stories. Crooks and Liars is reporting on a crazy story coming out of Nebraska involving capital punishment. They say, quote, on May 27th, a coalition of Democrats and Republicans in the Nebraska legislature approved LB 268, which abolishes the state's death penalty. Republican Governor Ricketts had vetoed the measure, but the legislature overrode his veto. Ricketts then called for a voter referendum to overturn the repeal. Then he said that the state would execute the 10 prisoners currently under sentence of death anyway, using sodium thiopental imported from India. All right, now let me break this down a little bit for you so you understand all the different angles here. So importing the lethal injection cocktail from India, that's illegal. You're not allowed to do that, and the FDA is supposed to, by law, they're supposed to seize the sodium thiopental once it gets to America. So it's like strike one, you're already breaking the law, and you're a fucking governor. Stay classy. Then also, this referendum that he's calling for, it hasn't happened yet. So as of right now, the law is the death penalty is illegal in Nebraska. Whether or not this governor acknowledges it or accepts it or likes it, that's the fucking law. They passed a death penalty repeal. This guy vetoed it. They overrode his veto. Sucks for you, son, if you're on the wrong side of it. But this is the way, you know, a nation of laws works and a democracy works. And then also, understand that the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, is the only body that can sign off and approve a death penalty sentence. which they haven't done in the case of these people who he still wants to execute. So Governor Ricketts here simply does not give a shit that what he wants to do is illegal in three or four different ways, and he's saying, I don't care, I'm going to execute anyway. Look, this gets into a broader conversation here about what the Republican Party has become at the state level, at the national level, and just everywhere in America. It's almost like even the moderates are fairly extreme. Because, you know, there was nothing that stood out about this guy beforehand. He was just your run-of-the-mill, down-the-line, right-wing douchebag. But look at what he's doing, and everybody's just kind of like, oh, I guess that's what's going to happen. I guess he's just going to ignore the law. How have we accepted this in America? I mean, these guys, I don't know what else to call this, man. If this isn't fascism, I don't know what is. So you have a democratic body that comes to a conclusion. We're dealing with what the law just became in the state. What he wants to do by executing them anyway is illegal in three or four different ways, and he's still like, I'm going to override that because it is my opinion that we should go in the other direction. Well, then why are we even bothering to have elections anymore? Why are we even bothering to pretend like we have a representative democracy? If this is what you're going to do, then what's the difference between going through the motions or fucking taking an AR-15 and getting 200 of your buddies with you and you storm in to your state government and you just take it over by force? What's the difference? If you're not going to follow the procedures, you're not going to follow the process, you're not going to actually listen to the courts and to the democratic body, then why are we even pretending anymore that we're functioning as a democracy? And I haven't even brought up the fact about money and politics at the national level. We're talking just here at a state level with this conservative asshole. Okay, you cannot do that, and there is no other conclusion but to say guys like this are un-American. You're un-American because the whole idea, even if you're a conservative, what do they say? States' rights. We believe in states' rights. We don't want no stinking feds. Well, here you have states' rights. Here you have the state government coming to a conclusion. Okay, we want to get rid of the death penalty. Oh, you vetoed it. Oh, we overrode your veto. And he's still not even going to listen. So whether it's the federal government or it's the state government, you say, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do what I want anyway. What's stopping these guys from doing anything? What's stopping these guys from going to a local paper they don't like, just round them up and throw them in jail? You've already said, I'm willing to ignore the law whenever I feel like it when it comes to the death penalty, taking away somebody's life. So why would you stop, you know, I don't like this newspaper, I don't like this columnist, throw them in jail, tell them to shut the fuck up. This is dangerous, man. It's dangerous. And the media is doing a disservice when they pretend like there are two legitimate parties in America. Oh, 50-50, Democrats say this, Republicans say that. Ooh, you make up your own mind. Ooh. No. The Republican Party has hoisted the pirate flag. They're not serious anymore. They're a bunch of crazy people. This is not okay. We need to stop this, and we need to do it ASAP. All right. Let's take a break here. When we come back, I got Ann Coulter for you guys. Oh, God, we're going to tear her apart. Oh, it's going to be so delicious. It's going to be so delicious. It's going to be so delicious like red delicious apples. Although I'm not sure those are any more delicious than the other ones. I kind of like the green apples more. Then I got America's Dumbest Congressman weighs in on the idea of a Palestinian state. And he basically, lives up to that title of America's Dumbest Congressman. God, the stuff he says is so unbelievable, man. I can't wait to do that story because he's just such a bad guy. Okay, let me stop talking. Now, Richard Dawkins versus Deepak Chopra, that should be fun. And a guy wins the lottery, and I fucking love him because of what he decided to do after he won the lottery. So later on in the show, we will have some positive stuff. All right, guys, stick right there. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. Exactly what's going to come out of your research. Like, you hear... All right, turn off this fucking music. All right. So, like, you hear something a crazy conservative says, and then you go, let me check that, because that's probably not right, but I want to double check here. And then you double check, and it's like, you just get a fucking tidal wave of information that basically says the conservative is 100% wrong. So you'll see what I'm referring to. I know I'm being pretty vague right now, but you'll see exactly what I'm referring to in a second here. All right, let me get my clip ready. And we're off. Ann Coulter went on a conservative radio show recently, and she had a conversation about immigration. She has a new anti-immigration book out. I'd love to look through that and then fact check it, and then stop reading after three pages when through three pages there's been 116 fact checks. It's probably, oh my God. Media Matters, get on that, man. You got to read that. I guarantee you that book is jam-packed of factual inaccuracies and probably at times outright racism. But anyway, she goes on a conservative talk show, and she does her standard anti-immigration talking points. I want to listen here, and then we'll come back and break this down.
I wasn't joking about that, by the way. They do give citizenship ceremonies in Spanish. They've been
really?
Doing that? Yes.
How
yes, Carter-appointed judge started doing it.
I had no idea
yes,
that happened, because, of course, in order to become a citizen, you have to pass an English test. Even
well,
I had to pass an English test.
That's very funny. You should be administering it to us. But the INS has waived the English language requirements for many immigrants, and it's not just... And that's obviously goes to the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you switching allegiance? Do you love this country? But beyond that, how about the wheelchair-only section? How about the section for the blind? Look, wish these people well, but we're not running an international charity here.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane for any country not to be using its immigration policies to bring in people better than us. Not people who are instantly going to need taxpayer assistance. We have our own poor people. And again, this includes all the immigrants who have come in, well, forever, who are here now. It's people who live in America we should be taking care of and not bringing in people we have to help.
People who live in America, we should be taking care of. People who live in America, we should be taking care of. She just said that. Okay, I want everybody to write that down, put it in quotes, and then next time she argues for cutting food stamps or Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or any other government program that helps people, you say, I thought you said that we should take care of people in America. So that's point number one here. Understand what she just said and understand that she definitely doesn't mean that. She doesn't want to help fucking anybody is what it comes down to. Doesn't matter if you're an American, if you're not an American, if you're an undocumented immigrant, if you're a legal immigrant. Doesn't matter. Well, actually, I lied. There is one group of people who she really likes helping. Rich old white men. Republicans in general, I guess you could say. That's who she's in favor of helping. So her larger point there was, well, kick out and don't allow in handicapped and disabled immigrants. She was outraged by that. She's like, oh, I saw a wheelchair ramp at the immigration office. Oh, gross. How dare we allow in people in wheelchairs? Yeah. Well, okay, and how about the ones who are already here? You want to ship out those people too? You want to round them up and ship them out? Now, we did a story yesterday about how since 1996, get this, $8.5 trillion went missing at the Pentagon. Missing. $8.5 trillion. Whoops, where'd we put it? I don't know. So if you're concerned about too much spending, which is what she's hinting at here about, we don't want to let in immigrants and then pay for everything for them. Oh. Well, take your focus and your anger and your outrage and put it on the Pentagon, which you won't do. You'd never do it, because even with this, you still want to increase spending to the Pentagon. So spare me your small government nonsense. The hypocrisy is obvious, and this giant contradiction is obvious. You just don't want to spend on brown-skinned people, but you have no problem spending on killing brown-skinned people. That's what's going on here. But here's what I love the most. Ann Coulter fancies herself such an uber-Christian that she once argued that we should try and convert the Middle East. So that's on a whole nother level of Christian. So why don't we go ahead and look at her holy book and see what it says about the deaf and the blind and the disabled and handicapped people. This should be fun. Matthew 5:5, they say, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Okay, so starting out simple there. I mean, they didn't really reference, like, you know, handicapped people, blind people, deaf people. They didn't mention that. So, well, maybe that one, Ann Coulter would say, well, that one doesn't apply. I don't know what you mean. That's, they weren't referring to what I'm talking about. Okay, well, let's move along here. 1 Peter 4:1. Since, therefore, Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same way of thinking. For whoever has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Okay, so if somebody's suffered, well, they've ceased from sin. It's the people who haven't suffered that are the sinners. Okay, that's becoming a little more obvious here, the kind of hinting that people who've gone through hardship, handicapped people, etc., they might be better people. That's kind of what they're getting at here. Well, let's continue. What else we have? Leviticus 19:14, quote, "You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind. But you shall fear your God. I am the Lord." That's even more clear. Do not curse or put a stumbling block in favor or in front of the blind or the deaf. I am your God. I will punish you if you do so. All right, he might be talking about you there, Anne. How about Luke 14:12-13? Quote, "When you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Invite them. Don't kick them out. That's what you want to do." Well, she might say they're referring to just a feast there. That doesn't mean invite them in the country. Okay. 2 Corinthians 12:19. "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me." All right. Do you know what that means? It means brag about your weaknesses. Be happy about your weaknesses. Embrace your weaknesses. It makes you a better person. And finally, we have Exodus 4:11. "Then the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? In other words, if you're bitching about blind people or deaf people or handicapped people or disabled people, you punk bitch, I, the Lord, created these people. I made them, and my creation is perfect. They're perfect as is. And you're just a ridiculous human being. That's what you are. You understand that? Oh, I'm so Christian. Oh, Jesus, yay. The Bible, yay. Well, why don't you try fucking reading it? Why don't you try looking at the parts that might question your adherence to conservative and Republican dogma? If you did that, you might just learn you're pretty much wrong about everything. Okay, that was fun. See what I mean? When I did a little research, you go, oh, wow, the Bible totally disagrees on the issue of keeping out disabled people. All right, next. Louis Gohmert. Oh, boy. We go from one stupid person to another. America's dumbest congressman went on an unhinged rant where he accused Obama of supporting terrorism and genocide because he dares to want a two-state solution with Israel and Palestine. Let's listen to this buffoon.
Netanyahu's made very clear they want peace, but how can they sit down with people who will not even acknowledge they have a right to exist? That's not a precondition. That is a condition for wiping them off the map as a threat to mankind if they're not willing to recognize that genocide is inappropriate. They are war criminal wannabes. And when people make clear that they're going to commit murder or genocide, how long do you have to wait before it's okay to stop them? Well, the president's made clear it may be time to move out of the way so that these Palestinians that want to obliterate Israel can have their will.
Oh, please.
I mean, one thought came back to mind back in my days as a felony judge. You know, when you have somebody who's driving a car and people say, hey, we just need a ride to this location. Once we get there, we're going to murder some people, but we don't need anything for you. We just need a ride. The person that drove that car, knowing that those people made those comments about wanting to kill people when they get to that location, they're also guilty of murder. So I'm not accusing anybody. I'm raising questions.
Oh, yeah.
So if the United States says, here, Palestinian terrorist groups, we want to provide you the vehicle to have a powerful place right in the middle, a huge section of Israel. We want to give you that place, and you've made clear, we know, you've made clear once you're there, you're going to wipe out Israel. Does that make the United States leaders that facilitate that, does that make them accessories?
I'm just asking questions.
Mr. Speaker, you can advise the parliamentary, and I'm not accusing anybody.
Of course
I'm just
not.
Asking the question.
That's it.
The president needs to be advised by somebody that people are threatening murder, genocide, and those are not the people whose side we should be on trying to accommodate to reach that goal.
I'm just asking if President Obama agrees with Palestinian terrorists and if President Obama is on the side of allowing a genocide. I'm just asking. I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just asking. And how can we – I mean, come on. We cannot work with anybody who's claimed, I want to do violence to the other side. I don't believe in their right to exist. Okay, but you fucking idiot. The point is – those extremists exist on both sides. He spent a good 15 minutes before this little clip here railing about, let me read you a quote from a member of Hamas. Yeah, we know Hamas are bad people. Nobody said they agree with Hamas. See, if you want to have a Palestinian state at all, what you're saying is I'm on the side of Hamas and I support genocide. No, look up the term straw man, okay? Because that's exactly what you're doing to President Obama, and that's exactly what you're doing to people who want a two-state solution. And by the way, you want to play this game? This game of you can't even consider working with people who are on the record as being bad people. You can't do it. Okay, good point. Well, I have a quote here from somebody named Ayelet Shaked, who's the Minister of Justice in the Israeli government. Very high-ranking position of authority, works with Benjamin Netanyahu, is part of the Jewish Home Party, which is the further right-wing party. Listen to what she said during the last incursion into Gaza. Quote, "They are all enemy combatants, and their blood shall be on all their heads. Now, this also includes the mothers of the martyrs, who send them to hell with flowers and kisses. They should follow their sons. Nothing would be more just. They should go, as should the physical homes in which they raised the snakes. Otherwise, more little snakes will be raised there. The morality of war, yes, there is such a thing, is founded on the assumption that there are wars in this world, and that war is not the normal state of things, and that in wars the enemy is usually an entire people, including its elderly and its women, its cities and its villages, its property and its infrastructure. What's so horrifying about understanding that the entire Palestinian people is the enemy?" Do you need me to repeat that, Louis? Somebody's calling for and they're fine with the destruction and the killing of the elderly, women, the little snakes who are the children. The entire Palestinian people is the enemy. The entire Palestinian people is the enemy. How can we work with anybody who's on the record as wanting to do such horrible things? I guess we need to cut all ties with Israel, right, Louis? Cut all of them, cut all of them. I just read you a quote, somebody who's high-ranking in the government, who's clearly on the side of, well, so what, we kill civilians sometimes, that's fine, I got no problem with that, the entire Palestinian people is the enemy. In other words, here's the point, jackass. You have extremists on both sides of the debate, but what do intelligent people do? What do rational people do? They go, okay, let's weed our way through the fucking sea of lunacy here, find the moderate voices on both sides, and get a fucking deal. But see, Louis Gohmert doesn't think like that because he's a dipshit. He's a dumbass. So what he thinks is, Israel, pure good. Palestine, pure evil. I'm Louis Gohmert. He said, quote, "Netanyahu made clear he wants peace." Netanyahu wants peace, he said. How little do you know about the world, you child? Were you paying attention to the recent incursion into Gaza? Where, according to the UN, first of all, thousands of people died, over 2,000 people died. Depending on which numbers you believe, investigative journalists or the UN, between 60 and 80% of the people who were killed were civilians. 500 children died. They attacked hospitals. They attacked schools. All things totally not allowed. Imagine if the Palestinians did it to them. International outrage. But since it's our ally, we're like, well, they meant well. Oh, really? That's the argument? It's cool because they meant well? Netanyahu does not want peace. He's blocked a peace deal ever since he's been in power. He's flip-flopped on the idea of a Palestinian state like 6 or 7 times. If he wanted a peace deal, if he wanted peace, he could come very close to it by doing a deal with the 1967 borders, but he refuses to do it. In fact, he's blocked it at the UN when Jordan proposed it there for the Palestinian people. He says, how can you sit down with someone who doesn't acknowledge your right to exist? He doesn't even realize he's making the argument that we shouldn't deal with Israel. Because I got news for you, Louis. Whether or not Hamas acknowledges Israel's right to exist. They literally exist. They have international recognition. On the flip side, Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel do not recognize, they refuse to recognize Palestine's right to exist, and they're actively blocking it. So the thing is, man, and this is why it's so frustrating, is you have a guy here who, he's just profoundly ignorant and profoundly stupid, and he views the world in a black and white way. There are no good Palestinians. There's nothing but good Israelis. And, you know, oh, how can we work with people who have admitted they don't want peace? Well, there are plenty of people on the Israeli side also who say they don't want peace. Israel wants all the land. The far right in Israel wants all the land. The far right in the Palestinian territories wants all the land. Smart people need to get to the table and work for a solution, for a two-state solution. You're not one of those smart people, so you should stop talking and especially stop accusing our president of wanting a genocide and accusing our president of being on the side of Hamas. Okay, if anything, because of Netanyahu's offensive into Gaza, you know what happened to the in the opinion polls on Hamas when they asked the Palestinian people, do they support Hamas after the incursion? Their support went up 15%. So because of Benjamin Netanyahu's incursion into Gaza, Hamas became 15% more popular. If anything, the best friend of Hamas is not President Obama, it's Benjamin Netanyahu. All right, I got worked up there, and I broke a sweat. I'm sorry, but I hate that, man. It's because of people like Louis Gohmert, we're never going to get peace. People like Louis Gohmert, people like Benjamin Netanyahu. I don't even think President Obama is committed enough to try to get a two-state solution. But people like Netanyahu and Louis Gohmert, as they blame everybody else, they refuse to acknowledge that they're the fucking problem. You're the problem. They do the same thing with Iran. Under no circumstance can we do a deal. Well, then you're the one that doesn't want peace, you dipshit. How can I... Oh, you mean well. But you don't mean well. You're saying you don't want peace. I'm shaking. I'm so mad. Jesus Christ. All right. Let's go to Richard Dawkins. Hopefully my forehead isn't lit up like a fucking light bulb because I'm sweating so much now. Richard Dawkins and Deepak Chopra are having themselves a little social media feud. So Raw Story had an article yesterday about how Dawkins jabbed Chopra at a recent event. In fact, we have a clip of it here. Take a look.
The Pew Forum published a new study of 35,000 adult Americans, revealing that the nuns, once again, are the fastest growing religious cohort in America. That is religiously unaffiliated. The nuns, so-called, N-O-N-E-S. Yeah, sorry, those of you not used to that jargon. So it went from about 7% to about 23% in the last 20 years, and then up to 34% of all Americans who are millennials, that is, born after 1981. So if you take that there's 245 million adult Americans, that's 56 million religiously unaffiliated adults of all ages. That's more than Protestants or Catholics. Are we winning?
We're going to have to, well, that's very good news, but we're going to have to get used to that word nuns more and more. And in order to forestall misunderstanding, could we change it to nones or something like that?
Well, unchurched is what sociologists call it. That's fine.
One of the problems is that the so-called nuns often give up religion for something even worse.
Or laterally crazy.
I mean, they take up Deepak Chopra or something like that.
Yes.
That was funny. As he would say, that's rather cheeky. So he's saying Deepak Chopra is actually worse than organized religion. And Deepak saw this. Raw Story ran the article. Somehow Deepak Chopra saw the article and he responded on Twitter and said, is Richard Dawkins intellectually challenged? Dishonest? He sent some other tweets too, where he's like, hashtag atheism, haha, or something like that. I don't know. But Deepak's a really weird dude. Like, one time, Lawrence Krauss and Richard Dawkins had a picture together, and Deepak started randomly tweeting at them stuff about, like, energy and the quantum fields and quantum. It's like, all right, dude, fall back a little bit. They're not up your ass, but you're up their ass. So, who's right in this feud between the two? Well, first, let's get the obvious out there. No, Deepak, you know, and everybody else knows, Richard Dawkins, if you agree or disagree with him, irrelevant. You know he's not intellectually challenged or dishonest. In fact, all the attacks that a lot of people have against new atheists, Richard Dawkins is definitely the one who's above any criticisms of new atheists, because sometimes people say, oh, a lot of new atheists are too conservative, this and that, yada, yada. I don't necessarily agree with that, but people make that argument. Richard Dawkins is like probably the most liberal and the most open-minded and, just the most left-wing new atheist character. So he's above all the other criticisms, and he's certainly not. No honest person can say that he is dishonest or that he's intellectually challenged. Now, there is a question, was he joking there? Maybe he was joking, maybe he was half serious, whatever, it was just a line, clearly it got some laughs there. But Deepak is wrong in calling, basically trying to do an ad hominem attack against Dawkins. But also, look, I don't know if Dawkins was serious there, but if he is serious, I don't agree with that. You know, I don't think Deepak Chopra is worse than organized religion. Deepak Chopra has not called for the death of infidels, and he's not called for slavery, like is in the Bible, for example. I mean, there's a trillion things that are worse in organized religion, you know, compared to Deepak Chopra. And Deepak, as far as I know, doesn't have a book where he claims it's inerrant, and it's just pure dogmatism. He makes shit up, and he's a weird dude, and he pretends to know shit he doesn't know, talking about quantum energy fields, yada yada. But he's not as bad. I would take the weirdo, new age, spiritual people over, like, a religious fundamentalist all day long. All day long. So I actually disagree with Richard in that respect, but I think he was probably partly joking. And I will grant him that in one small area he's right, in that Deepak may be worse than religious fundamentalists, and that he actually knows better. You know what I mean? Like, he's smart enough to know that he's full of shit. So, like, because you are, you should be better than what you're doing. Whereas, you know, some religious fundamentalists might have an IQ of 62, so you almost feel bad for them, and you're not, like, judging them in a way. So, interesting little feud here. You guys tell me what you think. All right, now, we move on to science. I will make love to science. How does that sound? Huffington Post UK is reporting on a science story that should bring a giant smile to all of our faces. They say, quote, "For the first time ever, scientists have produced an entire limb complete with veins and muscle in a lab. The artificial rat limb is an exciting development for regenerative medicine as it brings us one step closer to generating fully functioning human limbs created from a patient's own cells." So how exactly did they do it? Well, it's really interesting. They explain, quote, in a study published in the journal Biomaterials, researchers from Massachusetts outlined a recipe. They took a dead rat's limb and stripped it of all its cells, leaving a matrix of veins and nervous tissue, which acts as a support system for the new cells. They then placed it into a device known as a bioreactor while scientists injected new cells into the matrix, which, by the way, sounds like a fucking sentence straight out of the future. Injecting new cells into the matrix. Basically what that means is they injected cells that are basically slightly more advanced than stem cells into the, like, mesh of cells that they had there. And 2 weeks later, the arm had 80% of the strength of muscle found in newborn animals. And when they put it on a recipient animal, it worked. So this is an incredible scientific breakthrough. And understand, man, this is science. The scientific method goes as follows. You ask a question. You do research. You make a hypothesis. You test your hypothesis. You draw a conclusion. And then you report if you were right or not. That's why I always find it hilarious when people say science is arrogant. Science is the opposite of arrogant. It's the most humble thing possible, because if you're wrong, you must go back to square one. It's built into the system. So there's no such thing. There's no such thing as, oh, you're over-relying on science. Nonsense. If science ever gets something wrong, you just need more science. And more science will get you the right answer. And look, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Science actually does what religion only wishes it could do. Because what does religion want to do? Oh, we want to cure suffering. We want to relieve your mental anguish and your physical hurt. When people are really sick and they're terminal and they're in the last stages of life, what do? Okay, pray for me. Just hope I get to the better place when I leave here. Science actually has the ability and the potential to step in and say, oh, we actually have a cure for that. Or we're working on a cure for that. We got it. You know, here, we just extended your life or whatever. So science actually does what religion only wishes it could do. If more people recognize this and more governments recognize this, we would increase funding to these people, and then we'd live in a much better society. All right, and finally, I have such a good feel-good story for you guys coming out of Staten Island, New York. The AP is reporting that a 56-year-old guy named Anthony Perosi won the lotto for $136 million. So his take-home after taxes and everything is $88.5 million, which is still a gigantic amount of money. Now, here's why this guy is my hero. First of all, he took the money and he split it with his son. Now, he didn't have to do that, but he did it because he was just a decent guy. So he took $38.6 million, and his son got $16.5 million. So he did like a 70-30 split. which I still think is, you know, him being really nice, because, again, he didn't have to do it, but he did it. But here's what he said to the media, quote, "I honestly don't know what my plans are right now. I want to continue to work, but we'll be able to relax a little more and not have any worries financially." So he's saying, no, I will continue to work. I may work a little less, but I'm going to continue to do my job. All right, this guy is a plumber. Here's why I adore this guy. There's a great life lesson here. There's like a wise lesson in here. The guy genuinely likes being a plumber. Like, he picked a career where he's like, no, I actually enjoy it. Like, I wake up in the morning, and drink your coffee or whatever. You know, you actually enjoy the process, going to people's houses. You might find it ridiculous. I might find it ridiculous. I certainly don't want to be a plumber. But some people want to be fucking plumbers. So this guy's like, yeah, I like it. I'm going to keep doing it. That's it, man. See, that's the thing. That's what life is. You got to pick something where even if you win the lottery, you say to yourself, I still want to do it. Now, I know it's hard for some people. They don't have equal opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. We're fighting to get people equal opportunity, and we'll keep up that fight. But just know that on an individual level, it's your job to try to pick something that you do for your life, which you do it, and you do it happily, even after you win the lottery. It's a very important life lesson.
10 seconds.
All right, guys, I'm out of time. I'll see you next week. Love you. Peace.